Everyone, and welcome to minute 19 of season 7 of Movie Run Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again on this lovely Thursday is Nick Rehack of the Rabbit Hole Podcast Network. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thank you for having me on this wonderful Thursday.
Yeah, for sure. So minute 19 begins with Cobb continuing to get upset and ends with Simon giving new orders for a new task. So yesterday we ended things with Zeus picking up the phone and immediately doing his Samuel L. Jackson impersonation and pissing off Simon. And Simon just hangs up the phone. And the last line that we got yesterday that we were left on a cliffhanger was Cobb saying that was not. And today he continues with the word smart. There are lives at stake here. So I think it's very strange that, you know, they're so easily capitulating to Simon. You know, it's like, you know, this is back in the 90s. This is pre 9/11, but it is post the first World Trade Center attempted bombing. And it just makes me wonder, like, why is Cobb so easily, kissing ass here? You know, he wants to give Simon everything that anything possible.
I think it's because he doesn't want to take a chance on if this guy's bluffing or not on another, like, bombing or another situation going off. Because, like you said, there was the – I think it was, like, 92 or 93 where they tried to bomb the World Trade Center with, like, right, the van and stuff like that. Okay, cool. Where they were doing it with the van and stuff like that. And I think they referenced that kind of briefly in this film. But I think it's just that added, heightened, just, you know, unsure. And especially after that huge explosion goes off and – that's the only thing I can think of. That and maybe at least the beginning with McClain wearing that sign, maybe they're mad at McClain and they're like, you know what, let's just see what happens. Let's put him out there and, you know, bring him in and everything like that. Because at the beginning, McClain's kind of out of pocket. They got to go pull him out of, you know, whatever bottle they found him in, throw some water on him and then get him back out on the
street.
Right.
That's 100% true. But it's – I'm looking at it from the perspective that – you know, here you have a terrorist who is making them jump through all these different hoops. You know, I mean, we know that Cobb, you know, is willing to give in as much as possible here. And like you'd think that it would be more important for him to try to figure out who Simon is and how to get to him. You know, that type of thing. The way that he's showing this stuff is he's basically, I mean, he has and will constantly be throwing John under the bus.
Well, I wonder if it's a thing of just no. So if they keep dangling that carrot, eventually he might come out and then they could attack, or he'll say something and then he slips up and they're able to follow through. Just, I think he's just trying to use McClain kind of as bait, and he knows that McClain can handle it because obviously two previous films, we know what he's capable of. But I think it's just that because they don't know. There's just such an uncertainty that they're like, well, let's just follow along and anything will work. So hopefully this does.
Right. Okay. No, that's fair. That's fair. I just don't like his attitude with the whole thing. You know, maybe it's because I like John Moore. You know, maybe that's what it comes down to. You know, and he doesn't even know if his name is Walter or Arthur. So, but, you know. So I don't know. And you know, as Cobb is saying this, we get a shot of John where he's just like, he's smirking, he's smiling, he's like happy that Cobb is getting upset about this whole thing, you know, which is interesting. And then, you know, Ricky looks at his watch and then he says, not enough time, Inspector. Now I don't know if his watch is what's going to tell him that they didn't have enough time. They would have known if they were able to trace the call properly or not.
Yeah, it's true. So that seems kind of weird, but yeah.
Yeah. And then Cobb goes, you better hope he calls back. He will. Schiller chimes in. He will. Ricky, you want to tell those people to shut the hell up out there? And Ricky then opens the door and screams out, hey, keep it down here. Right before the phone rings, there's like a very uncomfortable silence in the room between all the people that are there, which always makes me chuckle. You know, the fact that you know, they're sitting here waiting for Simon to call. You know, he could call back in a minute, he could call back in an hour, but they're all just sitting there waiting, and there's like an uncomfortable silence about the whole thing. And as the phone rings, like everyone is jostled a little bit, and then they all answer the phone at the same time. You know, they pick it up so that they can listen in on this conference call.
Is it somebody who's like drawing? They all hurried up and pulled out.
That's right. Seriously. You know, Cobb then continues to brown nose, and he goes, Simon, he wasn't speaking for all. And, you know, Simon then assumes that Zeus is on the phone, and he goes, so what's your name, boy? Don't call me boy. I'm sorry. It was a poor attempt at humor. I was going to send you home with a chiding, but now I think perhaps you should join the game. So, first of all, I don't know. It's a very strange sense of humor that he thinks it's funny. I'm not even going to get into the idea of it sounding racist and all that stuff, but just, you know, to say that I was saying it this way, you know, to be funny. I don't know. I don't buy it.
Yeah, that absolutely lands flat for me. I don't know. It's not like it's the other way around, where Carver is the well-known detective and McClane is just a random guy. And if he knew about the guy's past, he could say one or two things that might dredge up a joke. But he doesn't know this guy at all. So, but I mean, does he really think that something like that is even going to fun? I think he's trying to rile him up so this way he can fight back and say, you know what, I told you that I'm not having anything like this. And then he could set a couple more bombs off or start the insanity or do whatever. But I genuinely think it's an antagonizing thing and like not at all like for a joke. Right.
That's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. And it works. You know, he doesn't know who Zeus is, but he chose the right person or the wrong person to make that comment to in order to piss him off.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And then we see Ricky say, we got him. You know, we see that he's very happy. He goes, it's a payphone in Oslo. No, wait, they say it's Juarez, Mexico. And then we hear Connie say, Norway. No, wait, no. Now they're saying it's Juarez, Mexico. So, first of all, it's just really funny that Ricky is a few seconds ahead of Connie here with saying the exact same places. You know, this isn't something that – it's not as if they're giving completely different places. You know, he says Oslo, yeah, and then he says Juarez, and then she goes Norway, and then – Juarez. So
yeah, I think it just adds to that confusion, and everybody just starts kind of freaking out, and it's all a game to him. So Simon's just laughing it up.
Oh yeah, for sure, because he knows that that's what they were going to be doing. I mean, it doesn't bother him at all.
Right.
And at this point, so okay, what do you know about Oslo?
That it's in Norway, and starts with an O, ends with an O, not a whole lot. Next.
Okay, so it is the most populous city in Norway. It has a population of about 700,000 people.
Okay, way more than I thought. Yeah.
It's both a county and a municipality. So the municipality has 700,000 people in it, and the urban area has a population of a little over a million. It's a city that's been around since the Viking Age. Approximately in 1040, but then it was known as Oslo instead of Oslo, and it eventually was changed. And it they changed the name then to Christiania, yeah, in honor of the king, who was King Christian IV, and you know, it stayed that way for hundreds of years. And it was the capital of Norway between 1814 and 1805. when there was a union between Sweden and Norway. And then in 1877, they changed the spelling of the name to Christiana with a K instead of a C. And then in 1925, they went back to renaming it Oslo. So it's only been 100 years, in, I guess, in the modern age that it's been known as Oslo. And that helped create a more modern city, I guess you can say, from the from that time. It is the economic way, and it's the hub of Norwegian trade, banking, industry, and shipping.
Okay, was not
Yeah.
expecting that.
And it was one of the pilot cities of the Council of Europe and the European Commission to start it up and stuff like that.
Oslo seems like a pretty cool
Yeah, it
place.
is also the second most expensive city to live in the world.
Okay, it's sounding less like a cool place to live.
Any guess what city might be more expensive to live in?
If it's not San Francisco or LA, then it's New York.
Tokyo.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. Okay. Was not. I thought maybe they would be top 10, but I didn't think they would take the full prize.
And it is the it's ranked as the 24th most livable city in the world. I don't really know what the
I
criteria
was
is
going to
for
say, what does that even mean?
that. Absolutely no idea.
Well, maybe in like like what services are available, how quick is it to be able to get food or go do this or go do that? Is it like a barren wasteland versus a lush forest kind of thing?
Yeah, it could be. It is also the fastest growing major city in Europe, population wise. Because they have very high birth rates there and there's a lot of immigration.
That makes sense. And I guess a lot of people just want to go north instead, or maybe the type of industry that's starting to boom is shifting up towards there.
Could be.
Interesting.
Could be. Now, Oslo also has a tradition of sending a Christmas tree every year to the cities of Washington, D.C., New York City, London, Edinburgh, Rotterdam, Antwerp, and Reykjavik. And they send every year since 1947 a somewhere between 65 to 80 foot high tree to England and support and the fact that England supported Norway during World War II. So as
I was going to say,
gratitude.
I feel like, yeah, I feel like all of that was like, hey, thanks for helping us out kind of thing.
That's right. So thank you for helping us out. We're going to cut down a tree every year for you.
It's actually kind of nice of them too, because
Yeah.
from a logistics perspective, if you're in one of those cities and you have to figure out where's the big tree come, that's one less thing you got to worry about. Now it's just a matter of, hey, we shipped it. Here's the tracking information. We'll see you. It's like, all right, cool.
Yeah, seriously. It's an interesting way to look at it. Okay, then they mentioned Juarez. Okay, what do you know about the city of Juarez, Mexico?
Johnny Cash, one of his songs, Hear My Train a Comin', Rollin' Around the Bend, so on and so forth, made his way into Juarez with Juanita on his lap. Place in Mexico. I mentioned a whole lot in the Wild West and, some of those cowboy tales and things like that. But outside of that, not a whole lot.
All right. Oh, it's also mentioned lately in a lot of movies dealing with the drug trade. So
Yeah, especially when you get
now,
to like narcos and things like that.
that's right. So the full name is actually not Juarez. It's and I'm probably going to mispronounce this. Ciudad Juarez, which is
Okay.
Ciudad. And up until 1888, it was known as El Paso de Norte, which means the Northern Pass. And they have an estimated population in this municipality of 2.5 million people, and
Wow.
it lies on the Rio Grande, south of El Paso.
Okay.
And so basically, El Paso and Juarez are considered, I guess, sister cities because they're right across the Rio Grande from one another. And it is the second largest by national metropolitan area on the Mexico-U.S. border, following San Diego and Tijuana.
That makes sense.
Because combined, they have 3.4 million people between El Paso and Juarez.
That's a lot.
Yeah, seriously. And there are four ways to get between Juarez and El Paso. There is what's known as the Bridge of the Americas, the Sleta-Zaragoza International Bridge, the Paso de Norte Bridge, and the Stanton Street Bridge. And okay. These bridges all together, on average, let about 23 million people cross back and forth between the U.S. and Mexico on a year annually. And so, therefore, it is considered a major point of entry and transportation into the U.S. for all of central northern Mexico.
Makes sense.
Right. Again, we're not getting into politics about when and where and whatever, but
that's for a different
let's stay
podcast.
As far. That's right. Let's stay as far away from politics as possible. I'm just stating facts, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Stating facts and moving on. And then afterwards, they continue, and then Walsh goes, "Forget it, Australia." He's scrambling up their system. They don't. And I mean, I love the fact that that Simon knows what's going on, because then the next thing he says is, "Having fun with the phone company, are we?" So again, he must have a plant there. There's no way that he could know all this information. Yeah, it goes back to the fact of how does he know when something. When how does he know when someone's on the phone and things like that? There's something that's tipping him off.
Yeah, absolutely, there is.
I don't know what, because it doesn't make any sense, but it just, you know, there's no other way for him to know that they're having problems with the phone company, because I mean maybe they're talking too loud. That could be the only other explanation that I can give here.
Yeah, because when the guy first says that it's coming from a payphone in Oslo, he's putting his phone over the receiver, sure, but it's still right there. It's not like he pulls it away from his face to say it. It's like right by there. And then you hear people shouting in the back, Juarez, and all that other stuff. So I think you are right in that they're just being loud.
And okay. I mean, he's obviously anticipating this. You know, he's aware of the fact that this is what, you know, they're going to be trying to do.
Yeah, you know, not the dummy.
I always love how in movies they, you know, the cops are always trying to record the conversation with the bad guys. And the bad guys are always oblivious to the fact that the cops are doing that. And they all know specifically how much time they have before they need to hang up.
Yeah, as if they're all aware of like the software and what the parameters are. And they're like, oh, well, you know, this. Oh, man, did you guys see the most recent system update? Now they're going to get us in 2 minutes instead of 2.5 minutes.
That's right.
Well, it's a good thing you told us, Tom. Like,
seriously, it's very, very strange. I don't know. and at this point, he decides that he's going to start giving them a new task. And he goes, Simon says, McLean, and then he gets cut off. We're going to have another cliffhanger here.
It's a whole week. Whole week full of.
That's right. A week full of cliffhangers. But, I mean, I like the fact that they're sometimes somewhat inconsistent here between the Simon Says and Simon and without the Simon Says. You know, at this point, he does say Simon Says, but he doesn't always say it when he's giving different tasks to be taken care of and stuff like that.
And it's always interesting, too, when you're figuring out, like, because then after a while, you start to play along and you're like, all right, well, he said this, but he didn't say Simon Says. So are they supposed to do that? You're waiting for him to slip up and he just doesn't.
Correct. That's right. No, I've noticed a few places where he does slip up a little bit, but
okay, all right.
But you know that's the way these things work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not gonna. We don't need to go into that. not this
that's
week.
That's for another episode.
That's for other episodes, exactly. That's for previous future episodes. Yeah, there are places where we will talk about that. But so I guess at this point it's good that he's consistent and so Simon Says. So, did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute, Nick?
Only I didn't realize, and we can just state blankets. We don't have to, or we can make blanket statements. We don't have to get anything specific. I just didn't realize how at times racially charged the film is. It really threw me off guard. I kind of forgotten about that part, and so when it came back, some of it was like a little bit jarring because I was like, "Whoa, hey, this is a bit much." So I just that just really caught me off guard. So like the joke he tried to make earlier, the way he referred to Carver, and the yesterday's minute that we talked about, I just it really caught me off guard.
Right, and also if you can go all the way back to the fact that with the sign that he had to wear in Harlem,
Yeah,
which
especially something like that. I was like, oh, because what and I'm like, oh yeah, oh no, he's putting on the sign, and yeah, it's just, oh.
in the novelization they change it to I Hate Everybody,
Okay, interesting.
which again, it won't be as dangerous walking around Harlem, having that written on your sign. So I don't know. Again, on the one hand, you want things to be realistic, but on the other hand, you don't want them crossing the line,
Yeah, and at what point? Yeah, and then it's the question is where is that line and what is that line? And then that devolves into a whole other conversation. But like I said, I just wanted to throw it out there. Like this is a little more racially charged than I thought it would be.
Okay, but I think it needs to be because of who the character of Zeus Carver is. Because part of the thing that they're trying to show here is that the way that Zeus acts towards white people is not necessarily that good either.
It's not always a positive exchange, if you will.
Correct. Correct. I mean, we know that he does not like white people. And I mean, next week in the script, there's even something that they cut out of the movie, which makes it even worse with the way that Zeus talks and stuff like that.
Oh, interesting. I'll have to listen to that episode then.
Well, I'm sure you will. What can I tell you? All right, did you have anything else for this minute?
Nope, just that.
All right, great. So, let's go into the script for what we have here. Cobb, we started this minute with Cobb being furious and says, "Christ, there are people's lives at stake. You better hope he calls back." A dreadful silence falls on the room. Everyone stares at the phone. The phone rings. Cobb springs for it, punches the button. The call connects. "Simon, please, Simon." He spoke out of turn. After a pause, "That was unpleasant. Don't let it happen again." "What's your name, boy?" "Zeus Carver. Don't call me boy. I'll call you Tar Baby if I like it. I was gonna spare you. Now I've changed my mind." So again, I'm glad they cut that out.
Yeah, that's really doubling down.
Yeah,
Good night.
that's right. Because at least in the movie, they try to say, "All right, we're I meant it as a joke." In the script, it doesn't. There's nothing as a joke. I mean, again, Simon is sinister. So,
Yeah.
it does say that he says it in a sinister way. It says, "Low, sinister. What's your name, boy?" So, it's an interesting way to look at things.
It is, it is.
Yeah. All right. So every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Revenge, Sibling Rivalry Story. So where my guest gives a story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something's happened to them over the course of their life that is somewhat dealing with revenge or possibly sibling rivalry or something like that. So, Nick, you have a story for us?
The only story I have revolves around growing up with my brother, and my grandmother on my father's side was our neighbor. And she would make candies and chocolates, especially around the holidays. Well, she needed test subjects, so she would call the house. We'd pick up, "Hey, Granny." She's like, "Hey, I just made a new batch." Didn't even finish the sentence. Me and my brother would just take off running, and we would race each other to the door, and whoever got to the door first, they were the one that got to eat the first treat, so on and so forth. Well, then it became a contest. I would be running, he would hop over fences in order to get there. We would try to throw stuff in each other's paths in order to stop.
Wow.
He went to hop the fence one time, and I shook it a little bit, and it threw him off, and he fell rather than landing on his feet and keep running. And then he got me back because a couple of weeks later, I didn't realize he had tied my shoelaces together.
Did he know that your grandmother was going to call and that's why he tied your shoelaces together?
I don't think he did. That's what makes it even funnier. I think he did it for another purpose, but then for the fact that grandmother calls and all of a sudden I rush over to throw my shoes, take one step and just immediately fall right on my face.
Is this diehard grandma?
Because like it was funny.
This diehard grandma?
No, this is. I don't think she really watched movies a whole lot.
Okay.
No, diehard grandmother is my mother's grandmother, who actually just had her birthday. So happy birthday, grandma.
Happy birthday, grandma.
But yeah, all of those times racing up there to beat each other, like that was just – that would bring me so much joy. Looking back at it now, it's just funny. Like it's out of a cartoon. It's out of a movie. My shoelaces tied together. Like,
what's the age difference between you guys? Floor.
2 years.
He's older or he's younger?
He's younger. Yeah. So it's just that right spot. And outside of that, we never really had any kind of rivalry outside of, you know, playing a video game or if we were fishing or turning random things into competitions. But the prize was always like, you know, you got to buy pizza or you got to get wings. It was always like a food kind of thing. So it was never like he owes me $20, blah, blah, blah. Like I've been very fortunate that my brother and I have always been really close and really supportive of each other. So, but the candy thing, put some candy between us. I think the rivalry will come back out.
All right. I'm going to be sending the Rehack brothers, some candy and see who's going to get there first.
I like it.
All right. Great. Thank you very much. That is a great story. I appreciate that. All right. Would you like to once again tell people where they can find Nick Rehack when he's not running to get candy?
When I'm not running to get candy, you can sometimes find me on a podcast, Play MST for Me, Lyrical Innuendo. And occasionally I'll be a guest on a podcast, Exploding Helicopter, Movies, Films, and Flicks, The Lamb Cast, Movies and Tea. I meet up with the gentleman over at the... I'm getting there. Okay. I'm getting there. Occasionally I get together with the gentleman over at the Asian Cinema Fan Club. And of course, Rob is always kind enough to invite me over to his series that he does. And I'm always excited whenever I get the email and I see what movie it's going to be. And, you know, this was a nice treat because I got to revisit Die Hard with a Vengeance. And I'm already looking forward to the next one.
If only I knew what I was doing next, but that's a separate issue. I have a few months to decide, so there are a few movies in the running. We'll see. All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Instagram. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Tony comes marching home again. Hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout. The ladies, they will all turn out. And we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.